price hikes and food, warnings of shortages to come, and now the muted feeling about the latest trade deals. Should New Zealand be rethinking its food policy? We export most of what we produce and we import lots of foods that we don't produce. Well, perhaps life would be simpler and easier if we did try to be self-sufficient. Or can we achieve the best of all worlds by exporting surplus and growing everything else that we need? And would that mean that that $20 block of cheese, which is cheaper to buy overseas than we can buy it here where it's produced, might become a thing of the past? Well, with me now is Jacqueline Roweth, adjunct professor at Lincoln University, a farmer elected director of Dairy NZ in Ravensdown, and producer appointed director on the board of Deer Industry NZ. Good morning, Jacqueline.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
And you. Let's start with the free trade deal with the EU. The dairy industry wanted more from the deal?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes, we did. And so did the meat sector. But what it hasn't done at this stage is mean we're worse off and we will be slightly better off in the future. But overall, from the look of it, New Zealand will be better off. And that's a good thing.
Well, Damien O'Connor didn't say these exact words, the Trade and Export Minister, but he said, sort of, stop your moaning, it's a good deal.
Yeah. Well, we won't be worse off. But he's made a lot of play about the lucrative market over there. And the fact is, we didn't get as much as we hoped. And we're doing a lot in terms of what we're told the lucrative market wants. And then we ask for the premium and it doesn't appear to appear, as it were. So that's a bit of a bobber.
But when you say the premium, you mean just bigger numbers?
Better prices and bigger numbers. So better prices, given that we operate under a highly regulated environment and we're trying to compete with a lot of places that don't operate with anything like our welfare or environmental regulations, noting, of course, that our farmers are very concerned about animal welfare and pretty concerned about the environment. But when you're actually operating at an A+, it's quite difficult to do even better. And so we had hoped that with ever more strict requirements in New Zealand, that we would be able to see entry into premium markets where our product would be valued more highly than in some other markets.
Let's start at the production end of things, Jacqueline. How much food do we grow for ourselves in New Zealand?
Oh, it depends which product you're talking about, but most of the meat and milk that we produce is actually exported. A lot of our apples, kiwi fruit, onions, potatoes, they're exported too. When we start looking at things like lettuces, which we know have a fragile shelf life, we're growing for the domestic market. That's not protein, but it is lovely little vitamins and nice crunch and, you know, good for salads and things. But actually, even some of our lettuces come, if the pre-washed bag sort, they come in from overseas. And part of the reason that people import things from overseas is because they think they will be able to sell them here because they're cheaper. And that goes back to our environmental regulations, regulations around animals, those sorts of things.
Can you give me a list of what we can't grow that we use a lot of?
Oh, let's start with the bananas.
Yes.
The most important thing, the most commonly bought fruit, apparently. It is possible in small areas, microclimate areas, a bit in Gisborne, a bit in Northland, and indeed in Hamilton in glasshouses, you can grow bananas, but they can come in from overseas much more cheaply because the climate suits them better and they have the infrastructure to deal with them. So all of the, well, at the moment, oranges are coming in from overseas. We haven't hit our straps for the New Zealand production yet. And of interest might be that we import most of the milling wheat, and it comes in as flour, from Australia for the North Island. We grow enough for the South Island, which is only about, a third to a quarter of the population. So, oh, Karen, coffee. Oh, we can't grow coffee very sensibly. There is one outfit up in Northland that does, well, it started off at about 50 kilos a year, but as I've... I don't think that would keep me in coffee, frankly. So, no, we need to be able to do that. We grow a little bit of tea, but we don't do sugar. And we know that a lot of the product, well, New Zealanders tend to have sweet teeth. And so everything that goes into delicious ice cream or any of the biscuits or muesli bars or any of those sorts of things. All of Chelsea is imported sugar. So that takes out quite a lot of what you want to eat. And there are estimates that we actually import 40 to 50% of what we consume.
Well, as we all know, the world's experiencing severe shortages, these staples, including wheat, as you mentioned, apples, coffee as well. And this is due to climate crisis as well as supply chain. But storms, drought, floods, we might be at the bottom of the world, but we're not immune from climate change, obviously.
No, we're not. No. And so we have had a very bad harvest season for the grain people this year, which does, because of supply and demand, mean that the ones that did manage to get their crops in have good prices for those crops because they're in short supply. But that's part of what is driving up the food prices in the supermarket. And people have said, well, it's because we've only two supermarkets and they're the ones, the dominance, and they get together. So maybe if we had more supermarket chains, we'd be better off. But actually, as you say, the insecurity of food globally is a lot to do with what's happening. And that's why when we look at the products on the supermarket shelves, they really have gone up significantly, outstripped in the last year, outstripped salaries. Whereas in the previous decade, salaries outstripped food. People forget that.
And when nations are worried about food supply locally, is it true that they stop exporting? And so, they just, they want to keep it. They want to hunker down, don't they?
Well, domestic food security is a very important aspect for governments, because if they don't have food security, they start riots and governments get overthrown, and they don't like that. We saw that in 2008 when we had the global financial crisis, but we've actually seen it just recently with, for instance, Malaysia, Indonesia saying they're not, it was Indonesia, not going to export palm oil, which is what a lot of cooking is about, because they want it for their own people. And part of that is in reaction to the fact that Ukraine-Russia problems mean that sunflower oil and canola oil is less available. So yes, protectionism is rife.
So how do we
And
th
that's what subsidies are about, Karen.
Yeah.
Subsidies that support farmers in the EU and UK and America, subsidies that support their farmers to continue what they're doing, even though they are not the most efficient at it, and that other countries can produce whatever it is they're doing more cheaply.
So
So
how
that's a bit of an irony.
Yeah, so how do we fit into the picture here when the EU's just opened up, for example, in terms of our exports? We're not likely to stop exporting. We want more exports.
Yeah, we do, because 95% of our milk products we can't eat. They go overseas. It's between 70 and 90% of our various meat streams, that is venison, beef, and lamb. And we just couldn't consume it. And most of our land from which that food is being produced couldn't really produce anything else. This is something that people forget when they say we should be producing more vegan type plant-based protein. Well, you have to ask, where would we do it? Because you can't grow chickpeas, lentils, and indeed rice in New Zealand sensibly. And most of what that is cropping. So you can't crop on hill country, not even on rolling country in many of the areas of New Zealand. So we need to be thinking about what we could do best. And actually, that comes down to the protein that people actually need. And most countries don't do as well as we do. And that protein is animal protein.
So that is the, for you, as far as you're concerned, that's the future of New Zealand's food production, animal protein.
Well, let's think about what the world needs. And essential amino acids are found for least environmental cost in animal protein, milk and meat. And calcium is found in milk in a way that an accessible calcium in a best form. So when you look at meat and milk, they're providing what people actually need at least environmental cost. Good quality protein. They don't need to eat very much of it to get what they need. So we can produce meat and milk for fewer greenhouse gases and less nitrogen loss to the environment, whether it's up or down, water or atmosphere, than other countries can achieve. So our role might be to help other countries do better in their production systems in terms of impact than they are able to do at the moment. And part of that is animal welfare and its proper feeding.
Well, we might be able to do it better than other countries, but it still doesn't mitigate the problems that we have with it in terms of the greenhouse gases and the pollution.
So then we'd be saying the problem for New Zealand is not so much that we have agriculture, it's that we don't have anything else that we can reduce. And when we start looking at any of the accords or agreements we've signed, what the Paris Accord said, the Paris Agreement, is that we should do everything we can to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, except unless it requires reduction in food. So we must not. It's without reducing food production. So the area that has actually been increasing hugely in New Zealand is the use of fossil fuels through transport. What can we do to address that?
So leave the dairy industry alone. You're biased, obviously, dairy industry alone. let's move on to something like water, which is an incredibly precious commodity around the world. And with rising temperatures, it might not be possible to increase irrigation for our needs here for food production.
Oh, we have an awful lot of water in New Zealand per capita. And yes, you're right, irrigation is going to become increasingly important. But we also have quite a lot of water that's simply not used and could be by irrigating and then letting it go out to sea. So I think we've got quite a way to go. And at this point, we need to remember, I think, that all wars are about resources or religion. And resources have started a lot of wars. What's the Ukraine thing about? And we, if we produce more food from a given area, then we can actually protect biosecurity. And I mean, keep the docket state and keep the tropical forest. So the intensity argument, and there's a lot of research on this, including through the OECD and FAO, is to improve production from the land that we have under production. And so if we go back to the point about agriculture in New Zealand, it is very efficient. We could be doing better efficiency with a better storage and use of water.
How are we going to get there?
Oh, well, there becomes the interesting problem. And remember, as a scientist, I think, frankly, that all countries should be encouraged to produce what they do best for the use of the world's population and get the distribution right. But politically, that becomes a bit of a challenge because then you're at risk of other people deciding they're not going to share their food with you, whether you're going to pay for it or not. Remember that most of the Ukraine wheat actually supports relief aid in Africa. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And actually, most of the Ukraine wheat and Russia, the yield is about 3 tons per hectare. New Zealand's practically 3 times that because we have good systems, precision agriculture. And so what's New Zealand's future? I think it's precision agriculture and helping others. So that's every unit of input used appropriately for the environment, the land, soil type, climate that you're looking at, and helping other countries to do the same.
What about organics? Marketing ourselves and actually following it through.
Well, that actually increases your greenhouse gases and possibly your nitrogen leaching per unit of food. So as a scientist, I'm not into that. I'm trying to help least impact.
Tell me how that works in scientific
terms. Isn't it sad? There's lots of research on it globally. That the organic product, this is why they need the premium, Karen. So the premium ag research, Gina Lucci did some work on it. You actually need about a 38% premium to be able to stay production fiscally responsible, economically viable with the organic production systems because their yields are not as great. They have fewer tools in their toolbox to deal with predation from insects or diseases. And because they're relying on organic manure, and frankly, we don't have enough in New Zealand because we don't house our animals, then nutrients become limiting and their yields decrease. And though there are theories about fallows and rotating crops and all of those sorts of things. Every time you have bare land, which is what the fallow is about, or you're trying to get another crop in to replace the one you've harvested, that is when you lose nitrogen. And so the nitrogen loss from an organic place can be higher, depending, than a neighbouring non-organic place. So I go back to precision agriculture, and every nutrient, a targeted nutrient, every chemical, a targeted chemical, and that enables optimally harvest versus inputs.
What do you mean by targeted?
Well, there's a lot of, you know, oh gosh, our modern chemicals, we should be going back to the old ways of organics. And organics allows quite a lot of chemicals to be used. They're approved chemicals. They're considered to be natural rather than synthetic, but they are approved. I mean, they are used. And copper sulfate is a major one, used to get rid of molds in particular. And that is not a targeted chemical. So it just is a broad spectrum, and it'll kill anything around of in terms of these fungi and molds. But some of the organic orchards and vineyards in France have actually very high, are beginning to have or have very high copper in their soils. And copper is a heavy metal. So it's not actually great. There's a story, well, it came across the media, that one of the big organic vineyards in France has stopped being organic because they're very concerned about their copper concentrations in their soils and actually having some of that picked up in their wines, and they don't want to do that. So they've stopped being organic. So targeting is the focusing of a chemical that disrupts only the thing that you don't want in the orchard or the market garden or wherever on the farm, and making sure that every input is an effective input.
What about its side effects, though?
Of which?
Limiting them. You're suggesting limiting the side effects of these targeted chemicals.
Oh, well, they don't have side effects because they're targeted at a particular thing that people have agreed is a bad thing. And in New Zealand, our Environmental Protection Authority checks what any chemical, new chemical, is being used for, at what rate and how, to make sure that there are guidelines which make sure that every chemical used is appropriately used.
Okay, Jacqueline, we have running out of time here, but I would like to just go back very quickly to that price tag we talked about
yes.
at the opening, that $20 block of cheese,
yep.
Possibly $10 for 500 grams yeah. of butter. What is yeah. the solution to what we're experiencing now?
Well, people are saying shock horror because they think they can buy it overseas more cheaply, but they forget that in New Zealand we have GST on everything. So 15% of what you're staring at is everything. Some of the price hike recently has been because the minimum wage has gone up, and so there are flow-on effects on that. But there are also the costs of production, and most people understand that fuel's gone up, fertilizer costs have gone up, labor's gone up, as I mentioned, any agrochemicals, the prices have gone up. But what they don't realize is when they're looking at a website overseas and seeing what that kilo of cheese or half a kilo of butter might be costing, is that overseas that GST is not on fresh fruit, and it's called VAT, value added tax. So they don't have it on unprocessed food. And bizarrely, there are things like chocolate ice cream is considered unprocessed, but if it's vanilla ice cream with a chocolate, you know, hard surround, then it is processed, so it attracts a bit of VAT. Or chocolate biscuits, which if the chocolate chips are within them, are considered not attracting VAT, but if the chocolate chips were on the outside of them, they would. So a lot of New Zealand has said, or when this first system of GST was being established, they've said there are so many ludicrous things where VAT is involved over in the EU and the UK, that really we should just have it on everything and get on with it. And there is a certain argument for that because of the bizarre decisions that have been made in the past. Are frozen peas processed or not processed? Is pea soup processed or not processed? So all of that is very time consuming. So I can understand why GST was just everywhere, except that then people complain that you could buy the same cheese overseas for cheaper But then they forget that it is up to the supermarket to run loss leaders.
The argument that always comes to us, or that I hear so often, is that if they can do it elsewhere, they can do it in New Zealand. They can separate these food goods.
Yeah, but it costs a lot. And they can also run loss leaders. And we all know that there are specials, and there are people stock up when there's a special and then go through the drought until the special comes again. So there are those sorts of things. There are two-for-one deals, and people certainly can buy two heads of broccoli sometimes. But France has banned them because actually they result in more food waste, and that's just a drain on the budget. So
yes.
should we be having... Yes, absolutely, all of these things. So should we be having food as a global resource, or do we need to retain the protectionism that other countries do for their farmers? And that's what the subsidies are about. They went up during COVID. They've gone up because of the Ukraine war. And I think it's the sort of, politically you would say we need to protect our domestic farmers. Remember, New Zealand does not have subsidies for farms. And then there's the global supply stuff. But we've got a perfect example with ham, with pig products at the moment, that there's a debate about increasing the already high welfare systems around the regulations around pig production. And I've just done the check. I did it especially for this program. If I want to buy ham, which of course I do, from New Zealand, it is going to be twice the amount that of the ham that comes in from other countries in the world. And part of that is because our regulations, which are high and graded highly for on-farm, are simply not the same overseas. In fact, some of the pork products are coming in from countries using systems that will be illegal here. And people don't understand that. They're going to take the cheaper product, probably. And I don't blame them. They just are not understanding the issues of why some products are cheaper when they come in from overseas than they can be produced here.
Just scratching the surface, Jacqueline, obviously.
Yeah.
And I'm not a chemical expert, you more so than me, but I know we're going to get a lot of response to your views on organics and what it does to the environment.
And I'm not saying which one should be used or not used. As a scientist, I evaluate and say, well, these are the facts. And so you get choices. There is a lot of research that shows, oh, the other thing is you just need more land. And most of my work, and I've been trying to save the world for, oh, since I was 16, I think, which is now some time ago, that in order to protect the native biodiversity in any of New Zealand's forests or tropical forests or anywhere with a growing population, we need to be increasing our efficiency of food production from the area that we already have. And this is the research around the world says we can't do that through organics. Not at the moment, but the research continues and maybe there'll be a breakthrough in the future.
Well, you do sound like the eternal optimist.
I think we need to go on with this precision agriculture. Every nutrient, every chemical, a needed and targeted nutrient, and then we can produce the least impact. And of course, if we are very efficient, then food prices will not escalate further.
Thank you for your views this morning, and thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.